All right, good morning, everyone. Let's continue. We find ourselves still in the first chapter of Perek Shira. And today we're going to focus on something that I think is going to be incredibly fascinating on a variety of levels. So far, remember, again, we've spoken about, in the course of Perek Shira, we've spoken about the Shamayim, the heavens, we've spoken about the Aretz, the earth, and now in this week we find ourselves in number one, we find ourselves in Gehenna. Not literally, of course, but figuratively. So Gehenna Omer, what does Gehenna say? Ki yisbia nefesh shokeka v'nefesh re'iva milei tov. So what does Gehenna say? Gehenna's statement, ultimately, again, is a statement from David HaMelech, a statement in Tehillim. For he has satisfied the longing soul and has filled the hungry soul with good. Ki yisbia nefesh shokeka. Kadosh Baruch Hu let's be clear. David HaMelech in Tehillim, when he discusses this pasuk, is speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Ribono Shel has the ability to satisfy the longing soul, the nefesh re'iva milei tov, and has filled the hungry soul with good. This is the message of Gehenna. So obviously this requires us a lot of deeper understanding and reflection. What exactly is Gehenna trying to teach us? Remember again, what we've seen in Perek Shira is that every aspect of the universe conveys a message. Every aspect of the universe conveys some type of message to us, to mankind. Gehenna is trying to tell us something. Gehenna is trying to teach us something. So the question is, what? Now, to fully appreciate the message of Gehenna, we have to spend a little bit of time understanding what is Gehenna. What is Gehenna? You know, we use this word. There are a couple of words in the English language that we use very flippantly, right? Perhaps number one on that list is love, right? Love. I love my wife and I love pizza, right? I love my children. I love football, right? I love the color blue and I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We use the word love and like very interchangeably. The other word we often use very flippantly is friend, right? I have so many friends. Nobody has so many friends, right? If you're lucky, you have a handful of friends. People might have a lot of acquaintances, but often we go ahead and we use the word acquaintance or someone who I know and the word friend very interchangeably. A chaver, a friend, is someone with whom you have a kesher nafshi, someone with whom you have an incredibly strong bond. It's not someone you call when you're, you know, online at 7 Mile and you have a couple of minutes that you want to take care of before you get to the checkout counter. A friend is someone with whom there's a deep and profound connection. Gehenna is another one of these words that unfortunately we use a little bit too. If it's above 90 degrees, it's Gehenna, right? It's hot, it's not Gehenna, right? Or sometimes people will talk about a difficult situation, it feels like Gehenna. No, it feels like difficulty, adversity, probably not Gehenna. And part of the misuse of that word is a lack of understanding what is Gehenna. So they're going to try to analyze a little bit today is to answer this question and to understand that there are, in fact, a variety of different levels of understanding. Take a look at number two. So the Gemara Maseches Brachos says as follows. Tan Rabbanan, Hameratze Ma'os Li'isha Miyado Li'ada, Kedei Lehisdak Yaba. The Gemara here is talking about lapses in morality. So the Gemara says, if a man purposely goes ahead and counts out money from a woman to give it to her hand with the intention of looking at her. So what the Gemara is talking about over here is a man who's engaging with a woman in what, on the most basic level, is a totally normative daily transaction. But his intention when engaging with her is to be able to look at her. She's a beautiful, attractive woman, and his idea, his intention, is to be able to look upon her beauty. So the Gemara says, "Afilu yesh biyado Torah u'ma'asim tovim kimo Shrabenu." Even if such a person ultimately has Torah, learned a lot of Torah, ma'asim tovim, mitzvos, kimo Shrabenu, like Moshe Rabbeinu himself, lo yinoke medina shel Gehenna. He will not be saved from the judgment of Gehenna. Now, the truth is, I'm not really drawing your focus to the lapse in morality over here, because that's not really our focus, although it is fascinating to see how Chazal understood that in matters of immorality, people generally do not commit immoral acts out of nowhere. Generally, there's a lead up from much smaller breaches in normative moral behavior that ultimately lead to a more profound lapse of immorality or an immoral act. But that's not my focus. What I'm showing you over here is that the way the Gemara understands Gehinnom is what? Gehinnom is where you get payback for your misdeeds. Gehinnom is where you get punished for your infractions, for your sinful behavior in this world. This is part of a larger motif of a journey. If I were to ask you, is there reward for mitzvos? Do we get rewarded for mitzvos? So this is subject to an incredible amount of discussion. The answer has to be yes, but the question becomes where? Right? Where exactly is that reward given? So you have conflicting ma'amari chazal, conflicting statements. Some statements of chazal say, schar mitzvah b'hayah amaleka. There's no reward for mitzvos in this world. There's only reward for mitzvos in the world to come. If you go with that motif, then it could very well be that the ultimate cheshbon, the ultimate accounting for how we lead our lives is not in this world, but rather it's in the world to come. And so for your mitzvos, there's Gan Eden, there's Olam Haba. For your averos, for your trespasses, there is Gehenom. So that's how Chazal seem to understand. Gehenom is where the accounting for all of my misdeeds in this world takes place. Other examples of this, the Gemara says in number 3, Amra Bar Shilam Rav Chista, Kol HaMenavel Piv, Menavel Piv Nivel Peh, one who speaks inappropriately, abuses his power of speech, Ma'amikin Lo Gehenom. Literally, again, he's sent again, Ma'amikin Lo literally means Gehenna becomes even deeper for him. So you see this, and I could give you many, many, many more examples of this, where Chazal understand that Gehenom is the place where you are punished for your misdeeds. Now, how that works, do you go there for some period of time? Do you stay there for some... We're not going to get into the mechanics of Gehenom. But for our purposes right now, ultimately, again, it's in Gehenom where there is an accounting for one's misdeeds, where there is punishment for one's negative deeds. Okay. If you take a look at number 4, conversely, if that is true, then there's another part to this discussion. The Gemara says in number 4, Amar Rabbi Chama bar Amar Rabbi Chama bar Rabbi Chanina, Chavakori kriyashma medakteik biyosi osea, mitzanenin lo Gehenom. Whoever goes ahead and recites Kriya Shema and is very careful with articulating each and every word of Kriya Shema, Mitzanen Elo Gehenna means that Gehenna is cooled down for such a person. This is part of the imagery of Gehenna being with fire, which we'll discuss in just a little bit, but Gehenna is cooled down. So now this interesting relationship here. Gehenna is the place where ultimately I am punished for all of my misdeeds. You know, this is a very important idea in Judaism that we do not like to really think about all that much. But because, you know, there's this fine line. So too often Judaism is portrayed as a punishment religion, right? Do good. Why? Why? Because otherwise you're going to get patched, right? So, no, first of all, no one wants a religion like that. No one wants a lifestyle like that. No one wants a God like that. We want a loving God, an accepting God, an embracing God. And of course, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. But there are repercussions for everything we do in this world. And at the end of the day, there's an accounting for every single thing that we do in this world, both good and not so good. Now, of course, you have to throw into the mix over here tshuva and the power of tshuva to go ahead and erase averos, to reverse averos, to make averos into mitzvos. There are many different processes that are at play. But on the most basic level, what the concept of Gehenom says is, you have to pay the price for your misdeeds. You have to pay the price for your indiscretions. You have to pay the price for your wrongful acts. Now, conversely, I have good deeds. And my good deeds, in a certain way, says the Gemara, could also offset the gravity of my misdeeds. So the Gemara says over here, that if a person says Kriya Shema with Kavana, whatever this means, a person says Kriya Shema with Kavana, it could cool down Gehenom for them. What does it mean, cool down Gehenom? It means that it could somehow offset the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's punishment for us after 120. So I would say, this is probably the more classical understanding of Gehenom. The place where ultimately, again, the neshama is judged and ultimately punished for its misdeeds, indiscretions, lapses in proper behavior over the course of a 120-year lifespan. In fact, the Gemara says in number 5, V'am Rabbi Yirmiyah, this is just interesting, Shosha Psachim Yesh L'Gehenom. There are three, don't worry about it, the shir is going to get more uplifting. I promise. I know this is like heavy stuff. But again, these are important ideas because very often we don't understand what we're talking about. When we talk about Gehenom, when we talk about Schar Va'onesh, you know, it's very important to understand that you have to give accounting for everything. You have to give accounting for everything. Like Lahavdil Elef Alfi Rive Havdalos, right? A lawyer has to show his billable hours. And if the billable hours are just not where they should be, there are repercussions for that. So there's 120 years of billable hours in this world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to say, okay, show me your accounting. Show me what you did with your hours. And there's schar for the things that we did well. But there are ramifications, repercussions, and onshim and punishments for the things that we don't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us so much, but never confuse love with a lack of responsibility. A parent who does not punish is a derelict parent. This is a very important idea because sometimes in New Age parenting, you know, there's no such thing as punishments. There are just conversations. Let's talk about this. No, we're not going to talk about this. You're actually going to get punished for this because this was inappropriate. This was wrong. And you have to understand if you are going to be a successful adult, you have to understand that there's right and there's wrong. We'll reinforce and reward your right and we will punish and ultimately again explain to you your wrong. And if you don't grow up that way, you become a very confused adult who doesn't understand the boundaries, who doesn't understand right and wrong, who doesn't understand how to put a proper path forward in life. Same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's right, there's wrong. There are mitzvos, there are averos. There's reward for mitzvos, there's punishment for averos. There's a Gan Eden, there's a Gehenom. We learned about Gan Eden last week. Now we're seeing Gehenom on a most basic level. It's the place where there's just the accounting for all that I did wrong. Hopefully, again, I did tshuva. But if I didn't do tshuva and there's baggage left after 120 years, I have to deal with that baggage. Where is that baggage dealt with? It's dealt with in a place called Gehenom. The Gemara, we don't have to really do number 5. I just put it in because I thought it's very interesting. Shosh psachim yesh le Gehenom. The Gemara says there are 3 entranceways to Gehenom. Echad b'midbar, ve'echad b'yam, ve'echad b'Yerushalayim. Amazingly enough, one of them is in the desert, one of them is in the sea, and one of them is by Yerushalayim. In fact, if you skip down towards the end of the Gemara says, Shnei Temuros Yesh Begei Ben Hinom. There are literally two date trees that rise up in the valley of Ben Hinom. Where is the valley of Ben Hinom? If you ever go in Yerushalayim, to the Tayalet, to the promenade, right? You walk there, there's a valley right in front of you there. That is the valley of Ben Hinnom. That's the valley. So the Gemara literally says that one of the entranceways to Gehenom is right there. The word Gehenom, which, you know, I want to be clear on something. The concept of hell is not a Jewish concept. The concept of hell is a Christian concept that comes with all of its own stuff. We have Gehenom. That word actually comes from Gehinom, from the valley of Hinnom, which was a description of one of the entranceways of Gehenom, which was by Yerushalayim. Take a look at number 6. But something interesting occurs. So the Gemara Maseches Pesachim has an additional discussion over here. And the Gemara says, V'ar b'matzei Shabbos Ivri. So the Gemara is talking about the creation of fire. Talk creation of fire. So someone makes a statement that fire was created on Matzah Shabbos, the first Saturday night. Fire was created. V'hatanyo. Is that true? Says the Gemara. Asar dvarim nivru be'erev Shabbos ben Hashemashos. The Gemara says that there were 10 things which were created erev Shabbos, Friday afternoon, during the twilight period, right before the onset of Shabbos. What were the 10 things? So the Gemara goes on. Be'er, Man, Keshes, Ksav, Michtav, Luchos, Kibro Shel Moshe, Ma'ara, Shama, Ba'Moshe, Elio, Psichas, Pia Asam, Psichas, Pia Aretz. I'm not going to go through all of these. Right? Rabbi Nechem, Yo'omer, Mishum, Aviv, Af, Ha'or. So the Gemara talks about things that were created on Erev Shabbos. So there's a whole list of things that were created on Erev Shabbos, and amongst them, fire. Fire was created on Shabbos. The Gemara says, we have a problem. You just said before that fire was created on Matzah Shabbos. In fact, again, we very much associate this, that fire was created on Matzah Shabbos. And in fact, we symbolize or we give an incredible symbolism to this every Matzei Shabbos with Havdalah. One of the reasons we use Eish is first, primarily, it's a halachic concept of Melacha. Melacha, active dynamic labor, was prohibited on Shabbos. Fire represents Melacha, therefore you do it Matzei Shabbos, but also because we know that fire was created Matzei Shabbos. Mor says, but it's not true. Fire was created on Erev Shabbos, to which the Gemara says, Lo kasha, haba ar didan, haba ar di gehenom. So the Gemara says two different fires. Ardidan b'matzei Shabbos, ardigehenem b'erev Shabbos. So the Gemara says it's not true. Our fire, regular fire, was created on Matzei Shabbos, but the fire of Gehenom, that was created on Erev Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, is that true? That the fire was created on Erev Shabbos? V'ardigehenem b'erev Shabbos, Ivri? V'hatanya, listen to this. Shiva dvarim nivru'u kodem shenivra olam. There were seven things which were created before the world was created. And what were they? Ve'eluhein, Torah, self-explanatory. Tshuva, also self-explanatory. Gan Eden, Gehenim, Kisei HaKavod, Beis HaMikdash, Ushmo Shel Mashiach. So what I want to draw your attention to is something quite fascinating, which is, according to this approach in the Gemara, Gehenim was created even before the world was created. Gehenim was created before the world was created. So this is quite profound. Because what's the obvious question? Right, why? That's always safe, right? You could always ask why. Right? Gehenim, we just saw before that Gehenim is, what's the role of Gehenim?
Consequences.
Right, consequences. The role of Gehenim, ultimately, again, is where you have to face the consequences for your misdeeds. That's a reality. And by the way, I want to also point out, if you view it that way, it's not even that Gehenim is a punishment. It's that Gehenim, again, is a consequence. The consequence of making bad decisions is that there are new realities that are created for you. We have an obvious question. If Gehenim is all about the place where I go for the accounting for my bad life decisions, so it only makes sense that Gehenim would have been created when? After at least the Chet of Adam and Chava, where there's a need for such a place. What does it mean that Gehenim is created even before the world itself? What does it mean that Gehenim's existence pre-existed humanity? Gehenim's existence pre-existed the world. Look at the list, the all-star list that Gehenim is a part of. Torah, Tshuva, Gan Eden, Kisei HaKavod, Beis HaMikdash, Shmo Shel Mashiach. These are pillars of universal existence. These are all pillars which, if they did not exist, humanity cannot exist. The world could not exist without Torah. The world, humanity, could not exist without Tshuva. The world cannot exist without a Gan Eden, a Kisei HaKavod, a Beis HaMikdash. And yet Gehenim is part of this list. Gehenim pre-exists the world. Gehenim is not born as a result ultimately of the sin of Adam and Chava, but Gehenim is here from the beginning. Which tells us that if Gehenim exists even before there is sin, that there's some deeper dimension to Gehenim. That there's something else that's unfolding over here. That maybe there's more to this place than just the place where I go to face the consequences and the realities of my bad life decisions. But maybe there's something deeper unfolding over here. So to understand the deeper dimension, I want to share with you an incredible Gemara. If you take a look at number 8. So this is a Gemara from Maseches Berachos. So the Gemara says over here, Kishchal Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So actually, I just did this as part of a series on Pirkei Avos. In my Ma'alot class, and we were studying this particular Mishnah of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai himself was an incredibly fascinating figure. I think one could probably make the argument that we are here today in good part because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's incredible knowledge and wisdom. In fact, the Gemara says he was one of the students of Hillel. He was the Katan Shebekulon. So Katan Shebekulon could either mean he was the youngest of the students, or it means that he was the least important of the students. Now, just so you understand the class rankings, the top of that class was a man by the name of Yonah son Ben Uziel, who wrote Targum Yonasan, who was so holy, the Gemara says that when he would learn, right, fire would come up, either come up or come down, that if a bird flew overhead while he was learning, the bird would be incinerated. So that was the top of the class. So I just want to point out, to be on the bottom of that class is still pretty good. But what's amazingly enough is that when Rabbi Yochanan, when Hillel was sick, his Talmidim came to visit him. The Talmidim went in. There wasn't enough room for everyone. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was left outside. So Hillel says to his students, Heichan HaKatan Shebachem. Where is the smallest student? He says, why? Because says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shu Av L'Chachma V'Av L'Doros. Because he is going to be a father of wisdom to all of you, and a father for generations. A father for generations. Meaning, he might not have been the greatest student in the class. He might not have been the brightest student in the class. But Hillel saw within him the necessary criteria ultimately to shepherd Klal Yisrael through one of the darkest chapters of our national existence, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So we're fast forwarding now to the end of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is sick. Nichnesu tamidav levakro. His students come in to do Bikur Chum to visit him. Kevan shira osam hischil livkos. When he sees his students, he begins to cry. Now the students are very surprised that their Rebbe is crying. And they say to him, Amulot tamidav, Neri Yisrael, Amut HaYemini, Patish HaChazak, Mipnei Ma'ata Bocha. Now the students don't understand why he's crying. Because again, as far as they're concerned, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai led an incredible life. No one lives forever. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Medrash says, was one of the people who lived until 120. He lived a long life. He lived a long life. And it's time to go meet your maker. But you could be proud of the life that you led. What is it that you're upset about? Why are you crying? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gives this incredible drasha. Amar Lahem, he says to them, so he goes on and he says, you know, if I be taken for judgment in front of a human king who is here today and gone tomorrow, who I could bribe, and even if he incarcerates me, the sentence is going to be limited, and yet I would be scared. Here I'm about to go before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'achshav, I'm in number 8 in the actual Gemara text, 5 lines down, right after the semicolon. Va'achshav shemolichin osi lifnei melech malchei hamelech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I'm being taken before God. Shuchai v'kayom li'olam uli'omei olam. He is eternal. Shim kois alai kaso kasolam. If he gets angry at me, his anger is eternal. V'im osrani yisuro yisroolam. If he incarcerates me, it's an eternal incarceration. V'im misani misasam yisroolam. If he kills me, my death could be forever. Shim kois, I'm sorry. V'ein yachol l'faisa b'dram l'shachta mamon. I can't bribe him with words, and nor can I bribe him with money. Now here's the point, I should have underlined this line, but here's the line I want you to focus on. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, furthermore, you want to know why I'm crying? Because I'm scared. Why am I scared? Because there are two pathways before me. Achos shel Gan Eden, v'achos shel Gehenim. One is Gan Eden, one is Gehenim. V'eini yodea be'eze molichim osi. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I do not know which path I am going down. I do not know which path I am being led down. V'lo efke, and should I not cry? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai literally says, I know I'm about to die. I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of the unknown which awaits me. I know that there are only two paths. There are only two paths. One path leads to Gan Eden. One path leads to Gehenna. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I do not know which path awaits me. I do not know which way I'm going. V'lo efke, and I shouldn't cry. So we're going to come back to this in just a moment. Amru Rabbeinu Barchinu. So they asked him then for a bracha, skip down to the end. B'shas petiraso, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is about to die, he's literally drawing his last breaths. His last words were, Pinukele mipnei atuma. Take out the utensils from the home so that they shouldn't become tameh. We're not going to get into the technical details of this, but very quickly. So remember, again, if a person dies in a home, in an enclosed area, there's something that's called tumas ohel. right? Which means anything under the same roof as the corpse becomes ritually impure as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was afraid that if his family had earthenware utensils, which cannot be purified, if they become tamei, that's it, they're done. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, again, in an incredible sensitivity, in his final breaths, his final word says, I know I'm going to expire shortly, please remove the utensils from the house. But I want to draw your attention to his last statement. Ve'achinu kisei lechizkiyahu melech Yehuda sheba. And prepare a chair for Chizkiyahu, the king of Yehuda, who is coming ultimately again to accompany me. So what I want to draw your attention to are these two exceptionally enigmatic statements. So I'll tell you what bothers me about this Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not sure where he's going. Right? Really? Really? You know, I want to be clear. The concept of anivus, the concept of humility, doesn't mean thinking you're a nothing. If you think you're a nothing, that's called low self-esteem. That's not called humility. Anivus means, I know who I am, I know what I am, but I also know that I have not even touched, you know, uncovered the tip of the iceberg of my potential. Because for everything that I have done, there's 10 more things that I can be doing. That's anivus, that's humility. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knows who he is. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saved Klal Yisrael from absolute existential destruction during the times of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Not only did he save Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai rebuilt Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the one, so much of what we do today, Zecher LeMikdash, Zecher LeChorban. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai taught us how to mourn, but not lose ourselves in mourning. He taught us how to mourn for that which we have lost, while simultaneously building towards the future. And he doesn't know if he's going to Gan Eden, and he's concerned that he's going to Gehenna. Really? Rabbi, I mean, first of all, I'm very bothered by this, because if Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is worried, oy vavoy, for the rest of us. Right? So what's happening over here? And the truth is, that last phrase is also enigmatic. Remember again, if you want to say that someone's going to be malava, someone's going to escort Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai along his final journey, I would have thought, who should he prepare a chair for? Eliyahu HaNavi. You know, again, not that Eliyahu HaNavi has anything to do with escorting the Neshamas during death, but if there's a personality, so to speak, that is constantly hovering between this world and the next, it's usually Eliyahu HaNavi. But yet it seems so random, prepare a chair for Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Why Chizkiyahu? So what's happening over here? So perhaps what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was concerned about was as follows. Let's start with Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. We know Chazal tell us that Chizkiyahu could have been the Mashiach. He had the ability, he had the personal piety, the generation was ready, all the ingredients were there for Messianic redemption. What happened? So we know the story. Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda decided not to get married. Why did he decide not to get married? Because he saw in Ruach HaKodesh, he saw prophetically that if he were to marry and have a son, his son would be an incredible Rasha. His son would be incredibly wicked. So he made the conscious decision to deny himself a normative married life in an effort to save Klal Yisrael from having a terrible Rasha at its helm. That was the decision he made. So the Gemara tells the story that Chizkiyahu is stricken with his final illness. So what happens? Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yeshayahu HaNavi to go visit Chizkiyahu. So Yeshayahu shows up, says to Chizkiyahu, you're going to die. First of all, very bad Bikur Cholim etiquette, right? But it's part of a bigger story, which is there's animosity between the king and the prophet. Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu do not really like each other very much for a variety of different reasons. So Yeshayahu comes in, hi, God told me you're going to die. Have a good day, right? So Chizkiyahu says, why? What did I do? So Yeshayahu tells him, because you chose to never marry, never have children. So again, Chizkiyahu says, can I explain? And he tells him the story. I saw I was going to have a son, he was going to be a Rasha, and I decided to take Klal Yisrael from that. To which Yeshayahu tells Chizkiyahu, Bahadi kav shei drachman alam alach. Don't get involved. You're not God. You're not God. Don't play God. Your job is to be a normal person. To be a normal person. Don't try to run the world. Just try to run your life, right? Do what you're supposed to do. Person's supposed to get married. Person's supposed to try to have a family. That's your job. Don't try to run God's world. So Chizkiyahu says, okay, fine. I'm a kabbal the Musar. I'm going to get married. I'm going to get married. And by the way, Yeshayahu, you happen to have a single daughter in Shiduchin. So I have a great idea. I'll marry your daughter. So Yeshayahu says, no, it's too late. You can't marry my daughter. I remember, didn't you hear what I told you when I walked in? After I said hi, what did I say? You're going to die. Right? So it's done. So to which, again, it's an incredible story. Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, I have a Masorah from my Alter Zeta from David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavaro sho'adim ayimones asu min arachamim. Even if there's a sharp sword against a person's neck, you never despair. There's always hope. Make a long story short, Yeshayahu gives his daughter to Chizkiyahu in marriage. They get married. Mazel tov. They have a son by the name of Menasheh. Menasheh was the longest reigning monarch. He reigned for 55 years. 33 of them, he was an unspeakable Rasha. He then decides to be about tshuva. He does genuine tshuva, an incredible tshuva. Tries to dial back everything he did over the first 33 years of his monarchy. Over the last 22 years, he had mild success. He was really unable to dial back all of the idolatry that he introduced. So Chizkiyahu was right. But at the end of the day, he was wrong. He was wrong because it's not man's job to run the world. But what's amazing is as follows. That cheshbon, that decision that Chizkiyahu made, although it was the right one in his eyes, cost Klal Yisrael Mashiach. Cost Klal Yisrael Mashiach. Because Chizkiyahu, and again, remember, I want to be clear. Chizkiyahu, understand the incredible self-sacrifice of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu sacrificed a life of companionship, a life of marriage, a life of a relationship. He sacrificed everything for Klal Yisrael. You want to say he took one for the team, it doesn't even do it justice. But he was wrong. He was wrong. His intentions were beautiful, were halig, were incredible, but he was wrong. And because he was wrong, Klal Yisrael lost out on the opportunity for messianic redemption. Chizkiyahu lost out on the opportunity to be the agent of not just national, but global salvation. What does this have to do with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? So you remember, again, I didn't put it on the sheet because we'll just do it outside. One of the most dramatic stories of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life is during the episode of the siege on Yerushalayim. So remember, again, give you a little history lesson. The Romans, under the leadership of Vespasian, he's the general, right, are laying siege to Yerushalayim. There's massive infighting within Klal Yisrael about what we should do about Roman aggression. The rabbi said diplomacy, because we're outnumbered. There's no way we can't wage a battle. We have to engage in diplomacy. There was a group of people called the Baryonim who were advocating for armed conflict. So what do? The Baryonim burn down the storehouses in Yerushalayim. There's massive famine. People are dropping dead on the streets. And the Baryonim say, you know, if there's no food, there's only one choice. And that's to what? That's to fight. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is smuggled out of the city, because he realizes it's going to be a massacre if we try to fight the Romans. He's smuggled out of the city. Remember, again, he fakes his own death. He's smuggled out of the city, and he comes face to face with Vespasian. Vespasian is about to be crowned as emperor of Rome in just a little bit. He comes face to face with Vespasian. Vespasian is very taken by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And he said, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm going back to Rome, but before I go, tell me, is there something I can do for you? Is there something I can do for you? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for three things. Number one, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. I know you're going to destroy Jerusalem. I know you're going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Spare Yavne v'chacham. The Sanhedrin, the high court, rabbinic leadership, was already relocated in Yavne. Spare the high court, because that way Torah will survive. And if Torah survives, we can always rebuild. Next, spare Shushil to Rabbi Gamliel. Spare the family line of Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel was a direct descendant of David HaMelech. Keep the Davidic line intact, because if the Davidic line is intact, then what? Then the Messianic line still continues. And the last thing he asked for is for a doctor specifically for Rabbi Tzadok and others who needed medical attention. Good. Vespasian says, fine, done. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes into the city, and his fellow rabbinic colleagues attack him viciously. Not physically. They attack him. They say, you fool. You fool. Vespasian told you that you could have whatever you want. Why didn't you ask him to turn around and go home? Why didn't you ask him to spare Jerusalem? Why didn't you ask him to spare the Beis HaMikdash? He told you, whatever you want. The mightiest ruler on the face of the earth told you you can have whatever you want, and you ask for Yavne, family of Rabbi Gamliel, and a doctor, you should have told him to go home. But ultimately, so what was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's logic? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's logic was the concept, as Chazal say it, of tafasta meruba, lo tafasta. Sometimes if you try to grab too much, you end up with nothing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't know if Vespasian would go ahead and agree to turn back. And you know, with a man like Vespasian, you don't know if he's going to say, well, no, I can't give you that, but what's next on your list? Right? There's one opportunity to speak to this man. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai makes a calculated decision. And what's the calculated decision? I know I can get these three things. I know I can get these three things. I don't know if I can get Vespasian to turn around. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decides to ask for the lower three and doesn't ask for the big one. And the other rabbis tell him, you fool. You doomed us all. Who was right? So we don't know. We don't know. Would Vespasian have listened to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Would he have turned around Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked him to? Maybe yes, maybe no. We will never know. But I will tell you one thing. That I guarantee you there was not a day that went by that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did not think about this encounter and ask himself, did I undersell the interests of our people? Did I underperform? Did I fail to go ahead and maximize the opportunity? That Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai every single day second guess, and understand, because understand, when the Romans breached the walls of Yerushalayim, 1.5 million Jews were slaughtered in Yerushalayim. 1.5 million people in Yerushalayim were butchered by the Romans. The Beis Hamikdash is not only destroyed, but the field, right, the land is turned into an agricultural field. It's a fallow field. There's nothing there. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has to attend the Levayas, and he has to see the destruction, and he sees the smoldering ashes that were smoldering for many, many years afterwards. And do you think that there was ever a day where he didn't second-guess that decision, revisit that fateful moment, and wonder to himself, did I make the right decision or not? So now what happens? That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says that you know who I think is going to escort me into wherever I'm going? I think it's going to be Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Why? Because we have a lot in common, me and Chizkiyahu. We both made decisions that we thought were for the benefit of the klal. And when we made them, they looked correct. And when we made them, they seemed like the appropriate approach. But the truth is, who knows? So Chizkiyahu, you understand me. And Chizkiyahu, I understand you. Hechinu kisi the Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Prepare a chair, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, for Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Because he understands the angst. He understands the sadness. He understands the difficulty that I have been contending with each and every day. And perhaps, this is the pshat of Gehenna as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I'm about to leave this world. And he says, there are two drachim, there are two pathways in front of me. Achos shal gan eden va'achos shal gehenim. One is gan eden, one is gehenim. And I don't know which one they're going to take me. Again, what does that mean? So perhaps what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to teach us is gehenim is not simply a place where you get punished for your misdeeds. That might be true. It's not, okay. Gehenim is much more severe. Gehenim is the place where you have to look at the reality that I underperformed in life. Gehenim is the place where I have to go and I have to look at the life that I could have lived versus the life that I did live. The scariest accounting after 120 is not for the averos we committed. I'm going to give you the line to use with HaKadosh Baruch Hu after 120. Write it down. Right? Write it down. Keep it on you. Tell the Chevra Kadisha to put it, you know, right by the Tachrichim. Right? This is the line. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that I sinned. But guess what, my father, Ribono Shel Olam, you made me. And you made me with my shortcomings, and you made me with my proclivities, and you made me with my desires, and you made me with my wants, and you made me with a lot of the forces that derailed me many times in life. Now it's true, I'm not arguing, I have bechira, I have free choice, I own my mistakes. But to be Ribono Shel'olam, you have to own your part also. You'll excuse me. You have to own your part also. You're my creator. You're the artisan. You're the craftsman. So you want to say that I have blame? Got it. I accept it. But you have to share with it a little bit. You have to share in it just a little bit. I didn't do all of this on my own, because I'll tell you what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had you given me a choice 120 years ago, whether to come down to this world or not, I would have told you, I'm good. I'm good. Everything is hunky-dory up here. Absolutely no need to send me down. But you didn't give me a choice. In fact, not only did you not give me a choice, when my neshama cried out to you, don't send me, you sent me anyway. You sent me. I told you I didn't want to go. I told you I didn't want to be here. And every single time I exhaled and my neshama yearned to jump out of my body, you pushed it back in. You kept me here. And you kept me here and you gave me a lot of the handicaps and a lot of the challenges that I faced in life. I understand. You also gave me the ability to overcome them. You also gave me the ability to master them. You gave me free will to make the right choices. I got it. And I failed. I accept my failures. I own my mistakes. But you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have to own your part as well. So accounting for your mistakes is not the scary part of Gehenna. You know what the scary part of Gehenna is? That you must face for all eternity that I underperformed. That I have to look at the life that I lived versus the life that I could have lived. I have to look at the person I was versus the person I could have become. This is what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying. I'm about to die. And there are two pathways in front of me. One of Gan Eden and one of Gehenna. Really, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you're afraid of going to Gehenna? Yes. But not because of Averus. Not because of the classical Gehenna that we thought about before. There's another dimension of Gehenna. That it's the place ultimately again where I have to confront that the life that I lived could have been more. The person I became could have been more. And who but Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives with this existential tension every single day? Could I have been the savior of Klal Yisrael? Could I have been the savior? Could I have been the man, ultimately, again, who turned away Vespasian's armies? Could I have been the man who saved the day? Could I have been the man who prevented 1.5 million men, women, and children by being mercilessly butchered by the Romans? Could I have been that man? That's Gehenna. And who's going to come with me to that Gehenna, potentially? Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, who could have been the Mashiach. How different our historical narrative would have been had Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda had been the Mashiach. How different our lives would be. How different our people would be. How different the world would be. That's Gehenna. Or that's a dimension of Gehenna. That Gehenna is ultimately, again, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, great job. Great job. But let me show you the life that you could have lived. Let me show you who you could have been. And you know, once the neshama comes up to Shamayim after 120, that's it. You're done. You know, the scariest part of death is not the cessation of life, especially if you believe in Olam Haba. The scariest part of death is that you have for an eternity, you must subsist on for an eternity, that which you accumulated in this world. So if you got it right, fantastic. And if you didn't get it right, for all eternity, you have to look at the person you could have been, the life you could have had, versus the person you became and the life you led. You know, there's a beautiful story that's told that the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was one of the Rashi Yeshiva, the Yeshiva of Alojin. So the Netziv wrote a commentary on Torah. It's called Emek HaDavar. He also wrote a halachic sefer called Emek She'ilo. So when he finished Emek HaShe'ilo, they made like a beautiful suit, and he told the story. He said, I want to tell you how I got to where I am today. It's a famous Maisa. So the Netziv was a very poor student. A very poor student. But I want to tell you, not because of learning challenges, not because, you know why he was a poor student? Because he was a rambunctious kid. You know, not every rambunctious kid has a problem. And not every rambunctious kid has a diagnosis. And not every rambunctious kid needs to be in a special this. Kids are kids. Kids are kids. Kids don't want to sit, right? The kids who want to sit, those are the aberrations. I would say those are the ones you should keep your eye on, right? So he was a rambunctious kid. He did not want to sit. He just simply did not want to sit. And so he wouldn't pay attention. He was disruptive. He got, you know, the use on all of the report cards, right? Unsatisfactory, mamish non-compliant, never prepared the books and materials. Nothing. 11 years old, the parents keep getting called into the cheder. So finally what ends up happening is the Rebbe at the cheder says to his father, listen, you know what? The kid is uninterested. He's checked out. You know, it's a very important idea in education as well, which is people often put all of the responsibility on educating children on teachers and institutions. You could have the best teachers and the best schools. If a child is checked out, they're checked out. You can maybe find ways to try to re-engage them, but you can't educate someone if they're not interested in being educated. It's a very important episode. So the Rebbe calls up the father and the Sifi says, listen, at the end of the day, your son, I believe, is a good boy, but he's wasting his time here in the cheder. He's wasting his time in the cheder. He's disrupting the kids. So then Siv tells that night, his parents thought he was in bed, but he was really eavesdropping on their conversations. By the way, a very big musser about having sensitive conversations and where to have them. So then Siv's father is talking with his mother. He says, listen, Naftali Tzvi, he's a beautiful boy. He's got a lot of koach, but he's not cut out for cheder. He's not cut out for cheder. So you know what, tomorrow I'm going to take him to become an apprentice to the shoemaker. Nothing wrong with being a shoemaker in Erlich HaBalabas, right? He'll daven, he'll learn, he'll be wonderful, but there's no need to force the kid to sit in cheder if he doesn't have the zitzvayish, if he doesn't have the ability to just sit and learn. It doesn't make sense to push him to do this. So the Netziv hears this, he overhears the conversation, and he begins crying. And he runs downstairs and he says, please, Father, give me one last chance. I promise I will get it together. And he tells the story that from that next day and on, he turned over a new leaf. He became diligent in his Torah, in his studies, became respectful to his teachers, sat in place. Hopefully he still had recess and whatever else. Hopefully he still caused a little bit of mischief. But ultimately, again, became a diligent student. So ultimately, again, he became one of the greatest Torah personalities of our people. The Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, one of the greatest sources of Torah for our people. So the Netziv said at this Siyam for the Emek HaShele, he said, I'll tell you what turned me around. He said, what scared me more than anything is that after 120, I would go up and face HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rebbe Shalom would say, Nu, Naftali Tzvi, what did you accomplish? So the Netziv says, and I would take out shoes. Beautiful shoes. And by the way, being a shoemaker, you know, the Torah tells us that one of the people in Bereshis, early on, Manoach, right, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu liked, Baruch HaKadosh Baruch Hu liked Manoach, because he made shoes, right? Making shoes is a beautiful, noble profession. You help people, you give people comfort, and I wish HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these shoes, that shoes, look, I developed this technology, that technology, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, Naftali Tzvi, beautiful shoes. Mamish to die for, right? Beautiful, beautiful shoes. But I want to show you something else. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take me over to a bookcase. And on the bookcase would be the Emek Davar, the Emek She'ela, and all of the other Svarim to be authored by the Netziv. And I would ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, those Svarim are so beautiful, who's the author? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say to me, it could have been you. Says the Netziv, that's the greatest fear after 120. Not the patch. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. And of course, other punishments, other repercussions for our avarice and misdeeds, yes, there are. But they're administered by a loving God who wants us to be successful. But the scariest part, the real Gehenim, is when you have to face the potential reality that I underperformed in life. That although I did some really great stuff, I could have done so much more. I could have been so much more. And when you have to look at the fact that you underperformed in life, says the Netziv, or says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that's Gehenna. That's Gehenna. Gehenna is not the place where you get patched, but Gehenna is the place where you have to look at the life you led, which might be very nice, very beautiful, and contrast it with the life you could have lived. You have to look at the person you became, ultimately again, and look at the person you could have been. And in fact, the Gemara number 9 gives a mashal for this. You know, we don't have to get into it right now. Actually, skip because of time. Skip to number 10. And then we take this a step further. Once you begin to understand that Gehenna is about underperformance, that Gehenna really is about contrasting the life that I lived versus the life I could have had. And again, we don't like to think about this because it's very unnerving when you begin to think about this. Because if you think about it again, even just think about a day. Think about how the day could have been used versus how the day was used. There are some days, Baruch Hashem, where I say to myself, you know what? I actually feel like today I did exactly what it was that I should have been doing. But there are many other days where I say, you know what? I know what I accomplished today, very nice, but the day could have been so much more. So multiply that by 365, by 120, and there's a whole lifetime that I have to give accounting for. And the scariest, the real Gehenna, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, says Chizkiyahu HaNavi, is when you have to look at the life that you led and contrast it against the life that you could have led. And now after being shown the life that you could have led, there's no recourse for that. There's nothing to do. I don't know, maybe there's Gilgul, you get a second chance, a third chance. I don't know about Gilgulim. But there's no opportunity to make that better. There's no opportunity to address that. That is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That says Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. That's ultimately, again, the Gehenna. Take a look at number 10 to take this a little bit further. So another, again, because of time, we don't have time to really get into this too much. So at the end of the day, the Gemara Torah records a conversation over here between Rabbi Meir and Elisha ben Avuya, Rabbi Meir and Acher. So they're talking Torah, and ultimately, again, Acher gives Rabbi Meir an interesting drash. Amar Rabbi Akiva, third line down in number 10, right after the period. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Kol lo Amar, Elo, Bara Tzadikim, Bar Rishayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu created wicked people, he created righteous people. Bara Gan Eden, Bara Gehenna. Shmuel created Gan Eden, created Gehenna. Kol echad ve'echad yeshlo shnei chalokim. Echad b'Gan Eden ve'echad b'Gehenna. So Elisha ben Avuya says, and it's dramatic that it's Elisha ben Avuya who says this, every person has two chalokim. There's a chalik, there's a portion in Gehenna, there's a portion in Gan Eden. Zocha tzadik natal chalko v'chalik chaveru b'Gan Eden. Nischayev rasha natal chalko v'chalik chaveru b'Gehenna. Elisha ben Avuya says something amazing. Every person, there are tzaddikim, there are rishayim, there is Gan Eden, there is Gehenna. And every person, says Elisha ben Avuya, has two chalakim, has two portions. One in Gan Eden, and one in Gehenna. And you know, in the Svarim, in Hasidic literature, they bring down this Gemara and they point out that Elisha ben Avuya is not just referring to a Gan Eden and Gehenna in the afterlife. He's referring to a Gan Eden and a Gehenna that exists within each of us every single day. Not only is Gehenna that place after 120 where I have to face the most overwhelming fear, the fear of life underperformance, the fear that I didn't get it right, the fear that I didn't do what I was supposed to do in the way I was supposed to do it. But says Elisha ben Avuya, out of all people, says Elisha ben Avuya Acher, the truth is each of us has a chelik of Gehenna inside each of us in this world. There's Gehenna of Olam Abba, there's Gehenna after 120, and there's Gehenna of this world. What's Gehenna of this world? We all know Gehenna of this world. You know what Gehenna of this world is? Gehenna of this world is that feeling you get sometimes inside yourself that tells you what? This is not right. This is not right. The life that I'm leading, the person that I am, it's not who I should be. I should be something bigger. I should be something better. Now, unfortunately, more often than not, when we go ahead and we hear that voice, what do we usually do? What do we usually do? Baruch Hashem for cell phones, right? Because as soon as you want to distract yourself in life, all you need to do is look, oh, Chaya Bela just had a turkey sandwich for lunch. That's great, right? It's so fascinating. And amazingly enough, and the great part is, it totally derails you from thinking about anything serious. But every once in a while, that voice of Gehenna, I hear it in my ears. I hear it in my heart. I hear it in my soul. And it says, you could be more. See, the voice of Gehenna never says, you're bad. That's what we think. The voice of Gehenna never says, you're Russia. The voice of Gehenna says something so different. The voice of Gehenna says, you're not doing enough. You could be so much better. This is what you're content with? This is the life that you're building for yourself? Didn't you want more Kiddusha? Didn't you want your children to be a little bit different? Didn't you want your family to be a little bit different? Didn't you want your marriage to be a little bit different? Didn't you want your home to be a little bit different? Didn't you want yourself to be a little bit different? Where did those dreams, where did those aspirations go? Where did those wants, where did those desires go? How have you lost your way? This is what Gehenna says to us. There's a piece of Gehenna inside each of us. And that piece of Gehenna says, excuse me. You're doing a lot of great things, but I just have to tell you, you're underperforming. You're not getting enough miles to the gallon. You could be doing more. You could be accomplishing more. And Elisha ben Avuya says, there's a Gehenna after 120, and there's a Gehenna that sits inside of each of us as well. And watch this, look at number 12. So the Gemara says, Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel. Truth is, 11 also. All right, let's take a look at 12. So the Gemara says, Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel. This is amazing. Now, literally translated, what it means is, whoever shears, like shearing a sheep, whoever shears wool off of his property and gives tzedakah. So the imagery or the metaphor of shearing is that I have a certain amount of wealth. I'm shearing off from my wealth. Whoever takes from his or her wealth and gives it to tzedakah, Nitzel Medina Shal Gehenna, is saved from Gehenna. Okay. On the most basic level, what is the Gemara telling us? What is the Gemara telling us? Tzedakah tatzel mimaves. Tzedakah is a good thing. Right? Tzedakah saves you from all kinds of things. Tzedakah saves you from difficulties in this world. Tzedakah saves you from difficulties in the world to come. Beautiful. But the imagery is quite amazing. Mashal, listen to this mashal. Mashal l'shtei rechelos shayu ovros b'mayim. This can be compared to two sheep. Rechelos. Maybe it's ewes, E-W-E, right? Young sheep that are going through the water. Achos gezuza va'achos ena gezuza. One is shorn and one is unshorn. Gezuza avra, the shorn sheep could go ahead and get through the water very easily. V'she'ena gezuza lo avra. But the unshorn sheep cannot. Why? Because the unshorn sheep just walks right through. The shorn sheep walks right through. The sheep with the wool gets weighed down by the water. Right? The wool absorbs the water and the sheep can't get through. So look what the Gemara is telling us. Kala gozeis min nechasav. You know, nechasav doesn't just have to mean your material property. Nechasav means what? Your life baggage. We all carry around stuff. Stuff. Now, by this, a lot of stuff. For some people, their stuff is an over-infatuation with materialism. For some people, their stuff are the failures of their past. For some people, their stuff are friendships which are just not healthy. For some people, their stuff are recreational activities which are not appropriate. For some people, their stuff is dysfunction in their marriage. Everybody has stuff that they carry around. So the Gemara says something amazing. Kala gozeis min nechasav, if you shear your life sheep, if you go ahead and you shear, you take away your baggage, vo semen tzedaka, nitzel medina shel gehenam. What does it mean, nitzel medina shel gehenam? Do you know why often in life we underperform? No one ever, begins by saying, you know what? I really want to live a life of underperformance. I'm kind of that guy. I'm the underperforming person, right? There always has to be one. I'm going to be the underperformer. No one ever says I want to be an underperformer. Everyone always wants to be the overachiever. That's what everybody wants to be. So why don't we become that person? Because at the end of the day, says the Gemara, we're weighed down by so many different things. At the end of the day, there are things, we are like the sheep, ultimately again with the wool. The wool is weighed down by the water of life and we can't get any traction. The Gemara says, if you want to escape the Gehenna in this world, you want to escape the Gehenna in the world to come, you want to stop underperforming in life, identify the things that are holding you back and let go of them. Because very often what ends up happening in life is we just become preoccupied with stuff that's just not important. We become preoccupied with stuff that might be emotionally charged, but I can't do anything about it. We become occupied with stuff that I cannot change. We become occupied with realities that I cannot shape. So what am I like? You'll excuse the meta. I am like a big, gizunta, unshorn sheep. It's difficult to move if you're a big, gizunta, unshorn sheep. And it's even harder if you're wading through the waters of life. Because every droplet holds you down a bit more. So if you decide to be that big, gizunta, unshorn sheep walking through the rivers of life, get ready for Gehenim. I know it sounds a little bit strong, right? Get ready for Gehenim in Olam Hazeh. Get ready for Gehenim in Olam Haba. Not the Gehenim of a patch, not the Gehenim of punishments, but the Gehenim of underperformance. The Gehenim of knowing that you're not the person you could be, and I'm not living the life that I have the ability to lead. So what's the answer? There's only one answer, which is shear the sheep. Let go of the stuff that's holding you back. Because if you don't let go, then at the end of the day, you are consigning yourself and confining yourself to a life of underperformance. Identify the things that are holding you back and find the courage to shear your sheep of life. And now we come full circle. Before we come, let's take a look at number 14. I know we're going running late, but I'll just finish up quickly. If you look at number 14, the Gemara Maseches Tamid says something amazing. Now, based on everything we learned, we can see, Tanu Rabbi Elio, Gehenom Lemala Min Harakia. That ultimately, again, says Tanu Rabbi Elio, that Gehenom is above the Rakia. What does this mean? You see, up until now, we always assume, where's Gehenom? Gehenom is down. By the way, we saw many Gemaras that indicate that way. The past, right, the three opening of Gehenoms are all down. Rabbi Tanu Rabbi Elio says, no, Gehenom is not down here. Gehenom is up here. Why? Because Gehenom is one of the greatest motivations for self-actualization and growth. Gehenom is just one step below Gan Eden. Gehenom is just one step below Gan Eden. Gehenom, remember again, the Rakia is the sky divider, right? The Rakia is what's divide the celestial sphere from the earth. Gehenom is right above the Rakia. Because the goal of Gehenom is not to patch us. The goal of Gehenom is not to punish us. The goal of Gehenom is not to make us burn or not to make us... No. The goal of Gehenom is to force us to self-actualize. The goal of Gehenom is to force us to realize that at the end of the day, none of us wants to confront the fact that we may have led a life of underperformance. Gehenom is not down below. Gehenom is up above. Because the Gehenom of Olam Hazeh and the Gehenom of Olam Haba are the ultimate tools necessary for a life of complete self-actualization. None of us want to look at the bookcase of what could have been. None of us want to look at the personality of what could have been. We want to know that the lives that we are living are the lives that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in store for us. We're maximizing our potential, actualizing our potential. Now we come full circle. So remember again, what does Gehenom say to us? This is a Perek Shirashi. Remember again, back to number one. What does Gehenom say to us? Gehenom, we're back to number one. Ki esbia nefesh shokeka, v'nefesh re'eva miletov. So literally translated again, for God, He has satisfied the longing soul and has filled the hungry soul with good. So ultimately, again, we don't have time to do it inside, but you'll look at it inside. I'll do it outside for now. Number 15, the Al-Sheikh says that what David HaMelech was saying is as follows. You know, in life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us two things. Ki yishbiya nefesh shokeka. The Al-Sheikh says there's a nefesh ruchni and a nefesh behemi. There is a spiritual soul and an animalistic soul. Right? The animalistic soul craves material comforts, material pleasures. The spiritual nefesh ultimately again yearns and pines for a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Ki yishbiya nefesh shokeka, if you yearn for personal greatness, God will help you satisfy that need. The same way, v'nefesh re'eva maletov, and if you crave for physical satisfaction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you satisfy that need as well. God helps us with our materialism, God helps us with our spirituality. But what's the choice we have to make? Which one we want to put the emphasis on? Do we want to put the emphasis on filling our belly? Do I want to put the emphasis on material self-actualization? Or do I want to put the emphasis on spiritual self-actualization? And what does Gehenom say to us? Gehenom says, there are plenty of people here already. I don't need any more. So Gehenom tells us, I hope I never get to see you. And I want to tell you how to avoid ever coming in contact with me. I want to tell you how to ultimately avoid Gehenom in this world and Gehenom in the next world. How? Number one priority in life. Ki yishbiya nefesh shokeka. Feed your soul. Feed your soul. Become something great. Become something beautiful. Don't settle for mediocrity. I know you can't ignore your material needs. We're physical beings. We're not supposed to ignore our material needs. We're not supposed to ignore our physical wants. We could satisfy and indulge and nurture and nourish those as well. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as it doesn't become the priority in life. As long as it's secondary. If you look at the order of the pasuk, it's number one. Ki yisbia nefesh shokeka. First, David HaMelech says, Gehenim says, self-actualize spiritually. Don't lead a life of underperformance. Become great. Yes, v'nefesh re'iva milei tov. Of course, you have to work. You have to earn a parnasa. You can have a nice house. You can wear nice clothing. You can eat good food. Go on a vacation. You can do all that stuff. It's fine. Enjoy it. As long as that's not the first thing in your self-actualization plans. The number one priority has to be ki yisbia nefesh okeka. If you have a longing soul and a hungry soul, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you accomplish great things. But if you reverse the order of the pasuk and you put self-actualization of your material life as the primary pursuit and spiritual self-actualization as the secondary pursuit, Gehenim says, you and I are going to be becoming good friends. Because we're going to spend a lot of time together. Because the ranks of the benches of Gehenim are not filled simply with sinners. They might have a place also. But more benches are occupied by the people who underperformed. More benches are occupied by the people who could have been in a tziv. Who could have written bookshelves of svarim. Who could have filled rooms filled with beautiful chassadim. Who could have given piles of tzedakah. That's who Gehenim is filled with. Gehenim is filled with the people who lived lives of underperformance. And Gehenim says, I love you. Gehenim's giving us pointers not to arrive there. Ki yisbia nefesh shokeka. Yearn for spiritual greatness. Long for something greater. Push yourself beyond your comfort zone. Do not settle into a life of mediocrity. Do not be content with the personality you've created or the life you've established. But always understand that there can be and should be more. Wherever you are is fantastic. Start planning the next step. And if we live lives of nefesh shokeka, of yearning, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees our yearning, He'll help us along that way. This is the message that Gehenim gives to us, and a message, Emir Hashem, that we will be zocha to internalize.